Arkansas's public television network pumps the brakes on its decision to disaffiliate from PBS. Northwest Arkansas's airport gets a new state-of-the-art control tower, and a new event celebrates people and their bodies who face systemic exclusion from the fashion world. Those stories and more are coming up this week on the News Wrap from the Arkansas Newsroom. I'm Daniel Breen, news director of Little Rock Public Radio. Each week, we're recapping the top stories from all across the natural state. We'll unpack the headlines, share exclusive insights, and provide the context you need to fully grasp the issues that matter most to Arkansans. That's this week on the Arkansas News Wrap, coming up right after the news from NPR. This is the Arkansas News Wrap. I'm Daniel Breen with Little Rock Public Radio. Arkansas's public television network is walking back a decision to disaffiliate with the National Public Broadcasting Service. Little Rock Public Radio's Nathan Treese covered the marathon meeting in Conway on Thursday, and he joins us now to break it down. Hey, Nathan.
Hello.
So we have a lot to talk about following Thursday's meeting, but first off, give us some background on Arkansas and its public television network.
Yeah, so as our listeners probably know, we have two types of public broadcasting here in the U.S., radio and television. Radio is, well, us. We're a nonprofit, local news station, and we carry programming from our national affiliate, NPR. The same can be said for television. There are local stations, and then there's the national PBS. We are one of three NPR affiliates here in Arkansas, but there's only always been one PBS affiliate in the state, and it's been known by many names. It's AETN, Arkansas PBS, and now Arkansas TV. And that most recent name change came about because in December, the board overseeing the network voted to disaffiliate from national PBS, becoming the first statewide network to do so.
And why did they do that?
As our listeners also probably remember, Congress voted last July to rescind all funding to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That was a taxpayer-funded corporation that distributed some funding to NPR and PBS, but the majority of their dollars went directly to local stations like our station and Arkansas TV. And just to be clear, Little Rock Public Radio did lose CPB funding as well, but we are not affiliated with the state's public television network, as is sometimes the case in other states. So, in response to that, Arkansas PBS commissioners voted to disaffiliate with PBS, rebrand to Arkansas TV, and to drop all PBS programming effective July 1st. Officials, including new CEO Carlton Wing, said this was a necessary move since they couldn't afford to pay dues for PBS programming without the roughly $2.5 million in CPB funding they were receiving each year.
All right. And as you said, this decision happened in December and resulted in a lot of public outcry against this move. Commissioners met once again on Thursday. What changed?
Well, what changed was the public outcry. A grassroots movement Friends of Arkansas PBS had formed, supported by a bipartisan pair of former Arkansas First Ladies, those Barbara Pryor and Gay White. In all, around 100 people were seated in an overflow area to watch Thursday's commission meeting, and 18 people provided public comment, none of whom supported disaffiliation. Joy Holmes of Conway said the loss of PBS Kids programming would be devastating to her two children, who have disorders resulting in lower levels of dopamine.
And it is very difficult for them to feel something as simple as delight. Christmas is not fun, birthdays are not fun, but PBS Family Day is fun. And the idea that that kind of emotional impact can be taken from kids similar to mine is a tragedy I cannot express the depth of, because my kids do not make enough dopamine. And PBS Kids gives them dopamine. It helps balance their brains so that they can learn.
A foundation report at Thursday's meeting noted it had lost around 3,000 donors since the split. Commissioners said they had received around 1,500 public comments via email, and actually noted this was the first time any of them could remember when anyone showed up for public comment at one of their meetings.
And there were also representatives from PBS at the meeting as well, though, right?
Not only that, PBS sent the boss. President and CEO Paula Kerger attended the meeting, along with a few affiliates. Kerger said she had serious concerns about the future of public television in Arkansas following the results of December's commission meeting, and she felt that the decision was made too quickly without input from the public and was based on a fundamental misunderstanding of their agreement.
What was the confusion?
Arkansas TV said their understanding was that they had to give PBS 180 days advance notice of their decision to disaffiliate, lest they, quote, be on the hook for the following year's dues. Kerger said that was not true. Her repeated assertion was that the station was allowed to make the split at any time on a prorated basis, meaning if Arkansas TV finalized the decision to cut ties, say, in September, they would only pay for the months from July to September, keeping in mind that fiscal years begin mid-calendar year. Aside from all that, Kerger said she didn't think Arkansas TV really made much of an effort to clarify this seeming misunderstanding.
I also would say that if you were considering such a significant move, that it would have been worth more than just an interpretation, but it would have been worth a second conversation saying, look, we're thinking of contemplating this. Anyone else that has even thought about this has had additional conversations with us.
And while she didn't say this outright, this kind of feeds into a larger feeling we heard from several public commenters that this decision may not actually be just financial, but more ideological. But Arkansas TV officials have said repeatedly that is not the case.
And did Kerger have any other points?
Yes, while Arkansas remains the only state to pull back from PBS, Kerger relayed a cautionary tale about a Los Angeles-based station that made a similar decision to disaffiliate and produce only local programming.
Because a number of years ago, they decided that they wanted to be the local LA station. They have a very big creative community, a very significant philanthropic base, and they said, there was a station in Orange County that was also running PBS programming, and they said, well, let them do the PBS programming, and we're going to go it alone. Within a very short period of time, they had to sell their studio, which was the oldest studio on the back lots of Hollywood. They sold it to the Church of Scientology. They went bankrupt, and they came back to PBS.
She also noted that some PBS stations have disaffiliated following the loss of CPB funding, but that those were primarily small, university-licensed stations in overlapping markets. Kerger also questioned how Arkansas TV planned to fund a full slate of local programming and fulfill the state legislature's stated objective of increasing locally produced educational programming. Arkansas TV CEO Carlton Wing said he expected funding to be supplemented by local corporate underwriting, which Kerger said was counter to national trends, calling both advertising and underwriting, quote, significantly challenged right now.
So that was enough to convince Arkansas TV to hit the pause on the cut?
Seemingly, yes. After about 4 hours of debate and testimony, Commissioner Cynthia Nance made the motion to officially pause the disaffiliation for up to 180 days past the original June 30th cutoff. It passed 4-1 on a roll call vote.
So what happens now?
Well, put bluntly, the message now seems to be put your money where your mouth is. Alluding to the letters sent to commission in response to the December vote, Commissioner Ann Klimmer said it was now time to write the check.
I hope that the people know that we listen to them, also know that we still have a financial obligation to keep this station running.
Yeah.
And if nothing changes, then our original decision from December is going to hold. We're not going to have a choice.
Carlton Wing indicated that he needs to see the $2 million funding gap bridged this year and be assured that it can be sustained each year going forward. That's a tall order from the public, but here's Wing speaking to me after the meeting.
We'll just kind of see what happens from this point forward. We know where we are financially. That is not hidden at all. Those numbers are out there for everybody to see, and everybody who's seen our balance sheet knows that this is an agency, as public television is in trouble. And so if there are other options that can provide that necessary funding, then great, we've got a path forward. If not, we have a path forward.
Another question is whether or not we'll see any new funding from the Arkansas legislature. Lawmakers will begin a fiscal session next month to approve a new state budget, but even simple appropriations bills for Arkansas TV have faced significant pushback in the past from more conservative members who disagree with some programming from national PBS. And that lack of support was another reason for that disaffiliation vote, since Wing is pretty familiar with the legislature after serving 4 terms in the State House of Representatives.
All right. Well, anything else we missed from the meeting?
The board also voted to elevate Commissioner Gary Newton to serve as chair, taking over from Woody Freeman, whose term ends later this month. Freeman also announced that Commissioner Annette Harrington had resigned from the board. Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders will choose Freeman's replacement, as well as someone to serve out the remaining 2 years of Harrington's term.
All right. Well, that is Little Rock Public Radio's Nathan Treese talking about Thursday's meeting of the Arkansas TV Commission. Thanks for your reporting, Nathan.
You're quite welcome.
The Federal Aviation Administration's administrator discussed the importance of airspace modernization during a visit to Northwest Arkansas on Wednesday. The Arkansas Advocate's Antoinette Grajeda has the details.
The head of the Federal Aviation Administration praised the opening of Northwest Arkansas National Airport's new traffic control tower Wednesday for contributing to the modernization of the nation's airspace. FAA Administrator Brian Bedford, who joined U.S. Representative Steve Womack and state lawmakers at the tower's opening, says the need to modernize is fundamental because of increased airspace activity.
We're going to have drones and advanced air mobility and supersonic and daily cadence on space launches. We have to build a NAS that's scalable, secure, and reliable.
The new 145-foot tower is nearly three times as tall as its predecessor, which was meant to be temporary when the airport opened in 1998. The new structure runs on digital technology, replacing the old tower's analog design, which Bedford says ran on copper wires and was extremely old and inefficient. He says many of the nation's control towers were built in the 1950s and 60s and are simply beyond their economic useful life. Airport spokesperson Olivia Tyler says the project cost $17.6 million, nearly $17 million of which came from the state and federal grants, including funds from the FAA. The airport, which became the state's busiest last year, is a job creator, Womack says, because it allows people to access the area. He says that's key for attracting talent for the local business community.
This is one piece of a much larger mosaic, if you will, in Northwest Arkansas, that helps develop the economic vitality that we are known for.
According to officials, six air traffic controllers are working in the new tower, which became operational Wednesday, and the goal is to add three more this year. Nationwide, there has been an ongoing shortage of air traffic controllers due to federal government shutdowns. According to a December report from the U.S. Government Accountability Office, lapses in appropriations in the 1910s and the COVID-19 pandemic resulted in reduced hiring and increased attrition. Bedford says there's a continued shortage because becoming an air traffic controller can take 3 to 4 years. To address this issue, he says officials started supercharging hiring last year by hiring more than 2,000 new trainees. He says another 2,200 are in the pipeline for this year, and they've been authorized for another 2,500 next year.
That's part A, fill up the pipeline. Part B is get them through training faster and more efficiently, and that's what we're going to be working on this year.
According to the GAO report, the FAA has increased hiring every year since 2021, but there were about 6% fewer controllers in fiscal year 2025 than a decade earlier. The report states that total flights using the air traffic control system increased by about 10% to 30.8 million between fiscal years 2015 and 2024.
That was Antoinette Grajeda with the Arkansas Advocate reporting. The Northwest Arkansas Fat Fashion Show is taking place later this month at the Medium in Springdale. Catherine Fitzwilson and Annalise Robbins are the producers of the show and spoke with KUAF's Sophia Norani. Robbins is an undergraduate student at the University of Arkansas studying apparel merchandising and has hosted fashion shows in the past. She says the idea for a fat fashion show came to her, and Fitzwilson's online presence inspired her to pursue it.
And Fitz, I looked it up. You had just started your Instagram.
Right. Yeah, I have a what I call a silly little Instagram that I post my outfits
on. I've seen it.
On.
I love them.
Thank you. Yeah, and originally it was just for me to make a commitment to myself to be creative each day and to kind of root myself in choice each day and doing a little task. And so I had done it previously, shut it down, restarted it right around when Annalise reached out.
Fitz has started doing it, and I had met Fitz at the Library Vintage. We were both wearing camo pants. I remember I looked it up. I DM'd you in March 8th or 9th. We had a coffee meeting. And then the next week, it was like March 12th even. Like, it was so soon after the medium released their grants. And in our meeting, we just chatted and met each other and really got to know each other. And then I was like, I want to do this. I think it should happen. Fit said yes. And we're like, okay, venue, money-wise, how do we do this? Man, we just need like a lump sum of money to make this really happen and to feel good about it. They released the grants. We applied and we got it. So it was crazy. And they were like, okay, now we're doing this.
Yeah. That one really is real, I guess.
Yeah.
And we answered those questions.
And that jump is from March to June. So June is when we heard back. Mm-hmm. So we were just kind of like, well, we'll see.
Yeah, I think in that in-between time, we had just met to keep dreaming about what would it look like? Who would we want to have involved? What is our like ethos of this? Because we were like, if we don't get the grant, we'll figure out some way to do it. But I think a sweet thing about the medium has been that we got the grant and the space, but also so many resources through their team and their knowledge. And so it has just been such a learning process, but also a really collaborative and special project with them. And so we're really glad we get to work with them on it. I think when we first started talking about this, we weren't sure how many designers we would want, but we had a few names in the community that we were feeling really confident about. And I think through talking to them, we remembered other people that we knew. And a theme of this process for us has been us saying out loud, it would be so cool to have XYZ thing, and the next day having someone DM us or email us and say, hey, I have this thing specifically that I would love to offer. And so with designers, I feel like that came together pretty quickly. And then with models, we put out a notice for an open model casting call at Sakaru Coffee in Fayetteville. And we were so shocked at the amount of people that turned out and got to just sit down with them and wanted to make sure it wasn't a you come in, you walk, we take your measurements, we don't talk to you, you leave. We really wanted it to be, let's sit down. Why would you like to be a part of this? What would make you feel comfortable in this process and safe in this process? And we were just so impressed by each of them and the reasons why they wanted to be a part.
We have 14 models in total, and we have 7 designers. One of them is a group of 2 designers working together. I also found out before we filled out the grant, we had posted kind of an Instagram story being like, would anyone come to this? And we got 80 responses on that.
Yeah.
And so one of my friends was also working on another event at George's, and she was like, yeah, my idea, you know, just put out a call and see. Just see if it gets anything, and then that's how you'll know. And so we did, and we immediately got responses, and it was crazy. Mm-hmm. And so we really did go through that and see who would be involved in that way, who initially filled it out, and then remembering people, reaching out to them.
Mm-hmm. All of us agree, not only systemically in the fashion world, is it harder as a fat person to express yourself, especially to express yourself in the way that you want to. You can technically find clothes that fit you, but do those match your style and your personal self-expression? Very limited. And the process of vintage clothing and sustainable clothing and fat fashion is very difficult. And so I think it was really fun to sit down with each of them and hear from each of them that they hadn't gotten to model before, or they haven't gotten to design a full collection before, or have never gotten to design for larger bodies, even though they're in a larger body. So many stories of people really wanting that gap filled and just not knowing how that would happen. And so we have been, I think, felt really inspired, and the motivation has felt really clear. The why has felt clear because it's what we all keep coming back to.
VIP tickets are open now, $50. It includes a meal at Handshake. They'll be popped up there. You can also get, included will be a VIP tote bag, block printed by Terry McNeil with the logo, and a button with the logo on it, designed by Sarah Evans, or Hobby House by Sarah. She'll be vending there as well. And then at 6:30, we kind of start a countdown, and that's when we open general admission doors. So also will be there is Middle Child Cookies. Tattoo Your Own Clothes will be there. And so they have taken our logos and put them into like an embroidery machine. And so you can come in and bring anything, or they're going to pull some things from the Library of Vintage for you to have tattooed. Lots of cool ties there. Fitz and Bean will be there. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. Fitz and Bean is essentially a mutual aid project between me and my best friend. It was originally developed when Roe v. Wade was overturned, and we were wanting to raise money for reproductive justice support, and my best friend will be there. They're like the most talented jewelry designer I've ever met. And so they'll be there selling their pieces, and that will go towards funding some medical care for them. And so feeling really excited about that.
NWAFatFashionShow.com or Instagram, it's NWAFatFashionShow. We did kind of looking at our press release. You specifically came to me and talked about afterward, and I was just like, that's it. Hearing like, okay, it's really hard for fat people to have clothes. It's really hard for them to even get representation if they are a professional model in this space right now. So many things there. But it sounds like you've built this kind of community where people are now, like, they're getting custom garments made for them. They're getting things made in their style. They're getting to walk. Kind of if community can come together, like fat people can have visibility and representation in a really beautiful way. Mm-hmm. That's not a spectacle. Mm-hmm. Whenever I was like doing some research about like fat people and where they've been represented, the main thing that I found in history was like circuses where it was like the 600 pound mm-hmm. lady. And I was like, whoa, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. Like that's what this is. That's where visibility was a spectacle. And so we're kind of breaking that down entirely. And it's just so fun.
Yeah, that was really an intentional choice. When we were talking about the show, we were like, we don't want to call it the curvy fashion show, the plus size fashion show, the like big bone fashion show. We're like, we really don't want to use these euphemisms that imply that the word fat is a bad word, because actually the word fat is a neutral description word. It does not imply morality. It does not imply health diagnoses. It just is a descriptor of someone's body. And we want to celebrate fatness in particular and make sure that people there know that we are leading the way and not skirting around that. And so that was important to us and has been one of the most talked about things, I think, with this show, people asking us about that in particular. And we're glad we did that.
That was Catherine Fitzwilson and Annalise Robbins speaking with KUAF Sophia Narani. You can find more information on the NWA Fat Fashion Show at KUAF.com. And that's it for this week. The Arkansas News Wrap is brought to you by the Arkansas Newsroom, a collaboration between KUAF in Fayetteville, KASU in Jonesboro, and Little Rock Public Radio. You can find this week's episode on any of our station's websites. Until next time, I'm Daniel Breen, and this is the Arkansas News Wrap.